This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Eating processed food for every meal isn't healthy for people or for dogs. We all know that. And kibble is subject to multiple rounds of high heat processing, making it an ultra processed food. The farmer's dog is real, fresh, healthy food with whole meat and veggies gently cooked in human-grade kitchens to preserve their nutritional value. My dog Barnaby loves the farmer's dogs. When he sees me pulling one of those packets out, he comes running. It's personalized, vet-developed, and it has recipes for as little as $2 a day. Meals arrive in pre-portioned, ready-to-serve packs, and they're conveniently delivered on whatever schedule works for me.
Get 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at thefarmersdog.com/happier. That's 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/happier.
Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast where we discuss cutting-edge science, the wisdom of the ages, and our own experiences about how to be happier. This week, we'll talk about why you should have an exact place for everything and why you should be very wary of anything that you call your precious. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, who's up for everything, Elizabeth Kraft.
That's me. I'm a writer and producer living in LA. And Gretchen, according to comments on iTunes, I'm both monotone and I sound like a man. So I just want you to know I'm working on that.
I don't think you sound like a man.
Well, others disagree. But anyway, before we get into Try This at Home, we wanted to remind everybody that we're going to have a special episode, episode 20, where it's going to be all about hearing from our listeners. And so to sort of kick that off, we're asking people to send in comments in response to this question. The question is, what's one thing you'd like to change about any relationship in your life? It could be something big or small. And the relationship could be with a spouse, with a boss, sister, whoever. We just want to hear what one thing you'd like to change. And we'd also love to hear from listeners your happiness demerits and gold stars.
Yeah.
So send those to us if possible and call in before June 24th. So we'll have time to sort them out. The number is 774-277-9336 or 77happy336.
Also, I just wanted to add that it's great if you can be fairly succinct because we want to include a lot of people's comments in this very special episode. Okay, Elizabeth, this week our Try This at Home is to have an exact place for everything.
This one could be life-changing for me.
This is something that I noticed from my own experience. It seemed easier, I thought, to have kind of an approximate place for things. You know, like this goes in that closet, or this goes in the bathroom cabinet, or this goes in the pantry. And what I've discovered, though, is that it's actually much easier to put things away. It's certainly easier to find them. And it's also more fun when things have an exact place. There's something weirdly satisfying about putting something away in exactly the right place that's kind of like an archer hitting a target. You feel that satisfaction. It's like, oh, it's like a puzzle piece fitting in, you know, the last piece to go in to complete the picture because something goes into exactly the right place.
It's funny because, of course, as you can imagine, I'm not somebody who has an exact place for everything.
Yeah.
You know, quite the opposite. I won't know if it's in the office or the kitchen. I have a vague sense there's a drawer somewhere where something might be. But as you're talking, I'm thinking about Jack's Legos, which, you know, he has a million Legos. And recently we got a bunch of bins to try to organize the Legos. And I was just saying to Adam, like 2 days ago, that we need more bins because if we had more bins and we could be more specific about what type of Lego went in each bin, it would actually be easier to organize.
Well, wait, I don't want to argue against what we're just saying to have an exact place for everything, but isn't there a danger that you're going to spend your entire day sorting Legos into bins? That sounds like it could get a pretty big job.
It is quite time consuming. It's a multi-person job, but I think we agree that it's sort of a meditative process, actually, sorting Legos.
That's true.
Yeah, it's very much like that. And I will say for Jack, it's way more fun when he can find the pieces he's looking for rather than just sort of, you know, having to sort through a huge big pile.
Grubbing through.
Yeah. So we're going to get more bins and just be bin crazy over here.
Well, I mean, this is another thing is I really don't like to spend time looking for things. I find that really, really irritating. So for part of the satisfaction for me comes from knowing exactly, like if I want a corkscrew, I know exactly where it is. I know where my passport is. I know where AA batteries are. And in fact, I use a mouse that I attach to my laptop and I always keep it in a certain place for when I travel. And it wasn't there. And I was like, well, where else could it be? It's like a violation of natural order. I would never put it anywhere else. So how is it not possible that it's there? And I looked everywhere. I was so annoyed. And then it turned out it was still in my backpack. I had never unpacked it when I came back from a trip. So actually, it was exactly where it was supposed to be because I knew exactly that it only belonged in one of two places, but I forgot to check the other place.
Wow.
Another thing about having an exact place for everything, a friend of mine, like none of her family would help her put things away or like put away folded laundry or anything because they're like, well, we don't know where it goes. So she, one night in a fury, she went around with a label maker and like labeled everything. And so now she's like, people know exactly where to find things and they know exactly where to put them away. So there's a lot of ways that this can minimize irritation, annoyance, resentment, and save you time from having to look around for things. And like you say, it can be kind of like a meditation. You know, it's putting things away meditation.
Yeah, Gretch, this is a simple idea, but I think for me, it could be life-changing. I love it. So let us know if you try this at home and if having an exact place for everything makes you happier.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. All right. In our next segment, we're going to talk about a happiness stumbling block. And this week, the stumbling block is your precious. And the precious gets its name from The Lord of the Rings. And if you know the books or the movies about The Lord of the Rings, you know there's a character, Gollum, this creature who has a ring, and he loves his ring. And the ring has turned him into a monster, and he's enslaved to the ring, and he's lost it, and he's looking for it. And he's constantly talking about his precious, his ring. And here he is talking about his precious.
They're thieves. They're filthy little thieves. Where is it? Where is it? They stole it from us. My precious. It's ours it is, and we want it.
All right, Gretch, so how is Gollum being enslaved to his ring? How does that relate to
In a magical land of Middle-earth.
Exactly. To this podcast.
Okay, so this is the thing. I have noticed with habits that many of us have a habit that really makes us unhappy, that enslaves us, that kind of turns us into a monster. We know it drains us. We know it isn't good for us. It causes us grief. And yet, at the thought of giving it up, we think, no, you can't take it from me. It's my precious. You know,
it's
like
scary when you do that.
But there's kind of something scary about my precious, because there is this sort of feeling of lack of control, or like there's something that you want, even though you know it's not good for you. And it's sort of a bad feeling to know that even though you know that something's not good for you, you cling to it. And Irene, I remember talking to a friend of mine, and she was like, yeah, you know what? I'm really drinking too much wine. And like, I come home every night and I say I'm not going to have it. And then I have it. And I always have a little bit too much. And, you know, I'm a total abstainer, right? So my answer to everything is just give it up. And I said, like, in a very gentle way, I said, well, maybe you want to just give up the wine. And she got this crazed look in her eye. And she was like, I could never give up my wine. And I'm not saying that she should give up her wine, or that she, but just the sense of like the precious, or going to sleep earlier. You know, some people say, oh, I'm exhausted all the time. And then you say, well, maybe you should go to sleep an hour early. And it's like, they become so agitated at the idea of giving up that precious thing. So Elizabeth, do you have a precious?
God, you know what? I think my precious is, I don't do that as well as you do, reality TV.
It's because you're not a Lord of the Rings fan. What, reality TV is your precious? How's that?
Because it's like, I love it and I watch way too much of it to the point where it does take away from other things.
Right.
Like sleep, reading books, watching movies that I'd want to be watching, or just better other TV shows that I'd want to watch.
Right.
But when I contemplate cutting back on it, or I get, like you're saying, agitated and very defensive and very like protective of my reality TV.
See, I think you're pointing out like the key thing, which is like, and I feel that about my precious.
Can't wait to hear that.
One of the tests of a precious is maybe it's not something that you just feel passionate about, and so you spend a lot of time with it, or you indulge in it a lot in a good way, but that somehow you feel like it's crowding out other things that in kind of a larger sense you feel like are more valuable or as valuable, but that aren't getting enough attention because the precious is somehow consuming that energy and that time and that space. So my precious, weirdly as it is to say, is Greek yogurt. Like,
okay. You know,
I don't eat sugar. So I eat like almost no, like very little fruit even. But I do put artificial sweetener and vanilla and cinnamon in Greek yogurt. And it's something sweet that I eat. And I love it. Mm. It's precious to me. And if I'm not careful, I'll start eating Greek yogurt like morning, noon, and night, you know, because it'll crowd out all the other food that I should eat. And that's not healthy. So I have to be like, it sounds like so trivial or small-minded to think that I have to like really pay attention to not letting myself get too addicted to Greek yogurt. And it is the point where, like, if I'd come home and I'd think I was going to have some and one of my daughters had eaten the last container, I would get that feeling of like, oh my gosh, like, how is this possible?
I'm having an image of you crouching in the corner of the kitchen, clutching a thing of Greek yogurt and like hissing at Eliza and Eleanor.
I mean, that is accurate. Don't get me between me and that last container. I mean, I have them squirreled away in the bottom drawer that nobody ever uses so that, you know, I have my secret stash. But it's like, I think that stumbling block is that when you recognize that you have something like that, you can think about, do I want to change my relationship to this thing? Or think about how I could approach it differently because it is maybe not healthy the way that I'm focused on it and how it's crowding out other things of value to me.
It's a tough one. I'm not going to tell you that I'm giving up reality TV whatsoever anytime soon. It's my precious.
Yeah. And so I am dying to hear what other people identify as their precious. So phone, email, Twitter, Facebook, send it in and let us know what you find to be precious. And if you include an extremely good impression of Gollum saying, my precious, maybe we'll play it on the air.
Thank you.
Okay, Elizabeth, it's time for the listener question.
This week, we've got Genevieve calling from Maryland.
I just listened to the podcast and was curious to know if you had any deeper advice for owls who are living in a lark world, because I found that the section talking about your chronotype, the tone of it was actually decidedly pro-lark and made the owls seem a little bit like sloppy individuals who just can't get it together. So I just wondered if you had any more information on that topic, and if you realized that the tone that was set even in the show was kind of like, yay, larks, boo, owls. Okay, thanks so much. Bye.
Well, it's actually the case. I certainly did not intend to sound dismissive of owls. And in fact, I think since I've started the research about habits for Better Than Before, I'm much more sympathetic to owls than I used to be. I used to think that if owls just went to bed earlier and got up earlier, they could become larks. And now I realize that's absolutely not the case, that owls, you know, part of it is how old you are, because people are very owlish as teenagers and become more larkish with time. But a lot of it is just genetically hardwired. And the fact is, owls are owls. And I actually believe that we should all be much more sympathetic and much more helpful to owls so that they can construct a life that allows them to be owls and not try to force them to constantly be trying to get them up out of bed earlier. I mean, Elizabeth, you're an owl.
Yeah, I think what you were saying is that the world is constructed for larks like yourself and not for owls like me.
And you suffer that. I mean, it's a pain for you.
It is. And it's, and I mean, I'm an owl, but not really so
extreme
much as my husband. I mean, Adam is an owl, you know, through and through, and it is really hard for him to get up early. Although I have lately started convincing him that it's okay to take early flights, which is a major victory on my part. But, you know, it's really tough. And I think as you and I discussed, something to do is to just try to find ways for an owl to do certain tasks that one would usually do in the morning, do them the night before, so that you can add a few extra minutes of sleep in the morning and stay up a little bit later and sleep a little bit later. I mean, it's really tough if someone has kids to do it. Like you said, you had a friend who's married. She's a lark married to an owl.
Right.
And you were telling, what were you telling her?
Well, so she's a lark married to an owl, and she was saying like, oh, you know, he's such a night person and he's terrible in the morning. And like, he gets up to help me get the two kids off for school, but he's not even helpful because he's just like sort of bumbling around and really grouchy. And I said to her, you know, and again, this is about the thing about maybe what we should do is to try to change the circumstances of owls to allow them to just sleep later. I said, you're saying that he's not being helpful. Why don't you just let him sleep? Because if the idea is that he's getting up to help you get the kids off to school, he's not, because he's just sort of not capable of that. So let him sleep, because that's what, and then maybe he'll do something like pack the lunches the night before or get the kids' clothes out the night before, because you're exhausted at the end of the day because you're a lark. But he is feeling much more productive and creative and energetic at that part of the day. So maybe he can help in the morning, like you say, the night before. And then you could just say like, look, dude, I'm just going to let you sleep in, because the fact is owls just, they just need that sleep. And I read about some writer who had four children, and this was like in the 60s, I think. And she hired somebody to come in the morning to get up, only to do the morning thing, like to get up, to wake her children up and get them off to school, and so that she could sleep till 11, because she simply could not function if she woke up early. So I would say we should all really try to help owls, like organize the workday and their personal lives to accommodate for that owl nature, because it's really something that's not very strongly within their control.
And, you know, in the case of your friend, it may be that if he had more sleep, he would do other things at night, like, you know, figure out plane tickets and all, you know, other stuff, because he would feel more energetic and more kindly about doing things.
And this just goes to the point that comes up over and over in what we talk about, which is that if you really recognize what's true about yourself, you can sort of maximize your natural inclinations and strengths, and then you can figure out ways to counterbalance your limitations and weaknesses. And so this is a way where you could sort of get the best of the lark-owl combination if you just think about how people approach the world in a different way. We all know that our life and our health can be improved when we eat nourishing, healthy meals, but it can be hard to maintain. With Sunbasket Meal Kits, it's easy because they take care of the details. Sunbasket offers 18 chef-crafted, dietitian-approved recipes each week with options like Mediterranean, carb-conscious, vegetarian, and keto-friendly. The recipes are quick and easy to follow, and you can enjoy a meal full of organic produce and clean ingredients that's ready in 30 minutes or less.
Try mouthwatering Sunbasket dishes like salmon burgers with lemon dill mayo and seared squash, or steaks with chimichurri and harissa roasted sweet potatoes. My son Jack loves salmon, and he loves the Sunbasket salmon burgers. Go to sunbasket.com/happier today to get $45 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/happier to get $45 off your first box plus free shipping.
All right, Gretch, I'm up with a happiness demerit.
Yeah.
This is a big one, I've got to say. I feel like I've really done a bad job. I mean, I want to say lately, but it's more than lately. It's years of being in touch with my friends on the East Coast. You know, most of my friends from college live on the East Coast. And, you know, the 3-hour time difference, it's just, as you and I know from trying to connect all the time, it's really a hassle.
It doesn't seem like it would be a big deal, but it really gets in the way.
It does. And I can't blame it all on that. It's just, you know, once you have kids, you're working, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just sort of like days slip away and you haven't called someone, and then you haven't emailed them, and then you don't want to email and just say hi when you haven't talked to someone for 5 months. So you're going to wait until you can really have time to talk or time to write a really long email. But so then you never do it. And then you keep, you know, and everyone's like, we need to get together. And I'm like, yeah, I want to get together. But then I, you know, am going to Kansas City over whatever holiday. So I'm not going to the East Coast, you know. And I just feel like I just haven't done my part to be close to people. I've thought about doing the updates like we do with mom and dad. But I feel like, I don't feel like this group is going to embrace that. I feel like they'll think it's cheesy.
It is so easy, though, and it does, because you're right. This is one of those things where it's like a nagging problem, but it's never urgent. So it's very easy to keep pushing it off.
Right. It's like on a day-to-day basis, you're just living your life, and then you step back and go, oh, man, like I haven't seen a friend in 2 years, you know.
Right.
So I really want to work on that and be an active friend, not just sort of a friend in theory. You know,
well, I know you started using Facebook because you were hoping that that would help. Did that help?
Well, not with this group, because they're not Facebook users.
Oh, they don't use Facebook.
Unfortunately, that helped with some of my other friends, but not my East Coasters. So that helps with LA friends, because no one in LA ever sees each other either. But that's a whole other happiness demerit. Anyway, I'll work on my end to be a better friend. Give me a nice gold star here.
Yeah, a nice little story. But I would just say, like, the happiness research does show that if you had to pick one key to happiness, it's relationships. So it really is, you're smart to be thinking about it, because, you know, using your time, your energy, your money to stay in touch with those important friends, like, is something that is going to pay off. But it's hard to sort of in all the chaos of everyday life to make time for that. But now we'll go to the gold star, which is more fun to contemplate. And I want to give a gold star to my mother-in-law, Judy, who's an amazing mother-in-law. Because one of the things, speaking of happiness research, that kind of surprised me is that there's always this talk of like, oh, you can reframe something and change your emotional experience to it. And I was always like, yeah, well, that just sounds like a little bit, you know.
Too
like,
easy.
Yeah, too easy. Things are what they are. Like, just thinking about it in a different way, how is that going to change things? Well, it turns out, actually, I've been completely convinced that it's true, that it's surprising how often you really can reframe something and truly change your attitude toward it and make yourself much happier about it. And I thought of this with my mother. Mother-in-law, because every year we go away on a vacation together for spring break. And I always thought of the plane ride as sort of being this unpleasant interruption, you know, kind of hurdle that you have to get through before you're getting on to wherever you're going. And that was sort of my attitude towards plane rides. And then my mother-in-law just happened to remark, she's like, oh, you know, I love the plane ride going on vacation because, or just generally, she likes plane rides generally because she was saying, like, you feel like no one can expect anything of you. It's kind of this holding time where you're just kind of free to do nothing and or just like do whatever you want, read a book. And that and she just feels like it's sort of very calm. Mm-hmm. There's no demands coming in. But then once you're wherever you're going, like, then it's like, oh, do I need to check my email? Oh, we need to, where are we going to go for dinner? And, oh, you know, where did I put my sunscreen? And all that, you know, sort of everyday life comes back right. in, all those little things, even when you're on vacation. And it was just funny because now I really dramatically changed the way I think about airplane rides. Now, this is true if you're traveling without small children, because, of course. Boy, traveling with small children, whole different thing. But if you're traveling with adults or with children who are old enough to keep themselves occupied, it's really true. Like, now I think I love airplane reading. That's my favorite kind of reading. It's like the most intense kind of reading. And there is sort of this lovely
outside of time.
Yeah, outside of time. That's a perfect way to put it. Kind of limbo feeling. And so instead of thinking of it as this unpleasant thing that had to be got through, I think of it as it's sort of its own little quiet pleasure. So gold star to Judy for helping me appreciate plane rides. And that's it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. Put things away in an exact place.
And call us for having our special 20th episode in which we're going to hear from you, our listeners. Please call us and tell us what one thing would you change in a relationship in your life. And don't forget, also call us with your happiness demerits and gold stars.
Yeah.
Our number is 774-277-9336 or 77HAPPY336.
And submit your comments by June 24th so we make sure to get them in time. And be succinct so that we have plenty of time to include lots of people's comments.
Thanks, as always, to our producer, Henry Malofsky, and also thanks to Andy Bowers and Laura Mayer of Panoply. Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.
This podcast is part of the Panoply Network. Check out our entire roster of podcasts at itunes.com/panoply.
Guys, did I sound less monotone that episode? Yay.